This is the way I define risk. Risk is moving from a comfortable average in pursuit of an unknown better. That's all it is. I'm not asking you to jump off buildings. I'm not asking you to do something that's, you know, physically dangerous. It's how do you move from a comfortable average in pursuit of an unknown better? So once you articulate that, people start to like, oh, that's not, doesn't seem so bad. I also say this, look, if you're doing something that was done 100 years ago, and so were kids, keep doing it.
Welcome everyone to Change Starts Here, the podcast where we dive into stories, ideas, and innovations that are shaping the future of education. I'm your host, Dustin Odom, and today we're in for a truly inspiring conversation with a guest who's, in my opinion, redefining what it means to lead and innovate in our schools, George Kuros. George is a former educator, a sought-after consultant, and the author of Innovator's Mindset and Innovate Inside the Box. But here's the thing, George doesn't just talk about innovation, he lives it. His passion for education was sparked by, of all things, Billy Madison. Yes, the Adam Sandler movie. And his story is as funny as you think it is. He's been on a mission ever since to empower educators and students to take risks, challenge the status quo, and most importantly, grow. In this episode, George shares why he's not a fan of being data-driven, but instead believes in being learner-driven. We'll explore how educators can embrace innovation, not by chasing what's new, but by focusing on what's better. We'll also dig into some deeply personal insights, like how George's own journey, losing 120 pounds and consistently blogging for over 15 years, has shaped his approach to leadership and risk-taking. From creating safe spaces for students and educators to take risks, to balancing being a visionary leader with the practicality of building a vision, George's perspectives are both practical and transformative. Plus, we'll hear some unforgettable stories about schools making innovation happen in real time. So, whether you're an educator looking for inspiration or a leader eager to push boundaries, you're going to want to stick around for this. It's one of our longer episodes, and we thought about cutting it down quite a bit or pulling apart in two episodes. But as we go into this holiday break, I wanted something that you guys could chew on either all at once or over time, because this conversation is worth it. This conversation, it's more than a conversation. It's basically a call to action. So enjoy it. I know you'll enjoy it as much as I did. George is a blessing to everyone he comes across, and his take on innovation is one that I greatly appreciate that we found. So enjoy. All right, George, thank you so much for making time to be here with us today. I'm really excited to talk to you.
Hey, like, I'm pumped, man. We started jamming about basketball, and I know nobody other than you and I wants to hear about it. So I'm glad we kind of got it out of the way. But
I'm pumped
to talk to you. I love all the, and I said this before, I'm a huge Covey fan. I've been really into the books and to the philosophy for years. And you can kind of see, as I was telling you before, it's really kind of peppered throughout my work over the years. It's really been influential to me. So I'm really honored to be here.
That's awesome. Well, I think my hope is for today that while it's an honor for, you know, our content to have influenced your work, My hope is that our listeners understand who you are and what you're about and recognize the life-changing and game-changing and life-giving work that you do and get more exposure to it. So this is great. I'm excited to get us started. Let's start with an easy soft lob. Just sure. Share with us your journey, just a bit about your journey into education and what your passion is for innovation in this space.
Yeah, weirdly enough, I had no interest in becoming a teacher, like none at all. And I was, you know, I'm the son of immigrant parents in Canada, and they saw education as a way to a better life. So basically, I had no choice but to go to university. Like, that was my mom had a grade 6 education, my dad grade 2 education. And I just went to university with no idea of what I was going to do. And I joke about this, but it's actually kind of true. I saw Billy Madison when I was a kid. I'm like, that's what I want to do. So I'm just like, I want to be around kids. Like, that looks so fun. So I'm like, I might as well be a teacher. Like, I'm not even kidding, you know? So like, if you look at the time frame of when that movie came out, when I became a teacher, it's right around the same time. And I actually just kind of went into it for a job. Wasn't really, you know, it's like something to do. It's funny, and you'll appreciate this. My second job, it was for a high school. It was a high school teaching position, and I went there. And in the interview, the principal said, and like, it was a really small town. Nobody wanted to go there. And they were kind of like, we have really no choice but to hire this guy. And that's kind of where it was. And he said in the interview, so I kind of have the feeling you're more interested in coaching basketball than you are teaching. I'm like, oh, you're not wrong. And so that's really like, I know, like, it's usually, when I was a child, I worked with kids and, you know, I just knew then that's not me at all. I had no interest in teaching, and probably for the first 5 years, no interest in teaching while I was teaching.
Yeah.
And then, you know, kind of started thinking differently about the profession. And, you know, I was trying some things, but I was kind of feeling a little lost. And then I got I went to a new job, basically said, I'm giving it 1 year, had an amazing leader who totally changed everything. And it really, really taught me how much leadership matters. Mm-hmm. I never really knew how much a principal could make a difference in someone's life until I had a really great one. And then, basically 1 year I'm about to quit, you know, giving it one last year. Then the next year I'm an assistant principal. And I was like, how did this happen? And then 2 years later, I'm a principal. And then 2 years after that, I'm doing focus on innovative teaching and learning at central office level because of the turnaround we had in our school, with my team. And so when we're really talking about innovation, a lot of my work was in the area of technology, but I was kind of pushing back on it.
Yep.
Because I kind of saw kids getting dumped off in a computer lab, totally disengaged, just kind of mindlessly staring at a screen while a teacher would grade things. I'm like, this isn't really good. So I was kind of anti-technology for a while. So when we looked at like, what does innovation mean? That was part of my role. And like years ago, this is, I think 2009, I was named Division Principal of Innovative Teaching and Learning, which was a brand new title. And if you look at the time in education, no one had innovation in their title at all. So it was like, hey, this is a really good name. What does this even mean? So part of my job was basically figure out what innovation means, how it applies to teaching and learning and leadership. And so that's kind of where Innovator's Mindset came out. And really, it's kind of just looking for new and better ways of teaching and learning. And I think leading too, I think that is kind of lost. We're always saying like, hey, teachers, you got to do these new incredible things. We want our kids doing these incredible things, but let's just kind of keep leadership the way it's always been, which doesn't really make sense. So really that's been the focus of my work probably for the last 15 years. Really looking at innovation. And yeah, it's interesting because I've seen how much of a human endeavor teaching is and how much people matter. And when I talk about innovation, it's really from a human-centric space where I think a lot of people, they really kind of focus on, here's this new cool thing, check out AI. And they're pushing tools. And then there's a little bit of a disconnect there, but really, how do you connect with people? How do you get kind of bring out the best in them, really focus on their strengths to do really amazing things in education? So that's kind of the pathway that I went. I wish it was a more inspiring story, but it's a real.
No, I love it. Basically what I learned is that you wanted to play dodgeball so you could peg kids as hard as possible. I had a lot of anger
issues when I was young.
I was disappointed when I learned that they took dodgeball out of schools around here. So because right. I had a similar vision for my life. All kidding aside, I think that's one of the things that I didn't articulate as clearly in our pre-call that I really appreciate about you, right? When you think about innovation, I told you I was the head of Office of Innovation, created the Office of Innovation in our district. But if I look back at my time and that, I wouldn't say I was incredibly innovative. It was, we did what was needed to be done in order to get the results. So that was good. But when I think innovation, I just love the fact that you think it's more human than anything else. And I think that's refreshing. And before we dive deeper into that, you said something that if I'm a principal or a district leader listening, I would want people who worked with me to say the same thing. You said this one principal helped you realize how important leadership is. And you said that you were ready to quit and then you didn't. In today's world, definitely in the US, retention of teachers and attracting new teachers is really difficult. What do you think are the key qualities of a leader that keeps people in their positions or lights a fire in them to stay in education or to follow their passion and contribute more?
Yeah. So I mentioned this earlier, my parents are immigrants and they had a restaurant, and a lot of my leadership philosophy is very similar to their restaurant and how people came in. They felt really welcome. Now my parents made amazing food. But the people just felt so appreciated when they came there, so welcome, so loved, that that's a place they wanted to be. And I think one of the things that I'm seeing quite a bit in education is you have leaders who have all of the knowledge, have all the content, learn all the strategies, will quote, you know, effect sizes on learning and all this other stuff, but they don't actually connect with people. They know the information, but they don't actually connect with people. And there is a gentleman, his name is Dr. David Pesek. I kind of make this joke that no matter what you do in education, like somebody hates you, And then the follow-up is, except for David Pesek, that guy, nobody disliked him. It was like, it was amazing how he was so beloved by people. And he said to me, I asked him for a piece of advice. We were talking about this earlier when I was reffing at a school one day. And I was a teacher at the time. He's a principal. I said, like, what's one piece of advice you give me? He said, if you are a teacher that's bad with curriculum and great with relationships, you will last way longer than one that's the other way around. Because I can teach you curriculum, right? I can't teach you to like people. And that, I think that is kind of that disconnect, is it's just, it's so focused on, like, I push back on this term all the time, the term data-driven. And I say this bluntly to people because there's a little bit of shock value. And there's a little bit of shock value, but I also totally believe what I'm about to say. I say data-driven is the stupidest term used in education. And people are like, right? And if you think about that, why did people become teachers in the first place? They're not like, you know what I want to do when I get older? Test kids. That would be awesome, right? Like, I just want to look at numbers. I want to, like, really dive deep into the data. So I challenge people and say, well, why don't we say learner-driven, evidence-informed practice? So really, we are driven by the people in front of us and that practice. But then we use evidence and we look at things like in a more holistic way, because the term data, not the definition, but the perception of the terminology, is anything that can be easily measured, right? But evidence is much more holistic. Yeah, it can be tests, but it's also conversations in the hallways. And so the David Pesek, the reason I bring up David Pesek, it's the same is true with leadership, right? Like, I can know all the strategies, but if I don't connect with people, I'm not going to last as long as someone who was really good with people, who will figure out the strategies and the ideas later. So that's kind of been my mentality. And, you know, even when I started as a principal, I was pretty young at the time. And, you know, like, I don't know much, but I spent every morning going out, playing basketball with kids. I went out with recesses, hanging out with kids. We were allowed to play dodgeball too, right? And so I did all that stuff. And I, by the way, still undefeated in basketball with anyone under grade 7. So I've never lost. 6'4" kind of helps you. But right away with my staff, they're like, I don't know if this guy knows anything, but at least he likes kids, you know? And it bought me a credibility with them really, really quick. And it wasn't like, I'm going to, like, you know, pretend I'm a child and, like, go hang out. It was like, I genuinely liked being around kids. I genuinely liked having conversations with them, and they saw that. So they gave me some grace, right? So if I knew everything, but they saw me, like, hiding in my office, because boy, I do this education thing, but boy, do I just like kids. I think that's a really hard thing to do. So that, to me, is really, how do you connect with people, really understand who they are, who you serve, and connect? And I think that's a through line in everything that I do, in the way that I try to, you know, even bringing people on my podcast, my whole thing is, how do I bring out the best in them? Not, you know, how do I, you know, and I always ask them, like, it's funny, because you kind of said the same thing to me. You're like, what can I do for you? Like, how can I bring out the best in you? Like, what do you need from me? What would be beneficial to you? And I was, like, kind of thrown off, because I always ask that. So yeah, that's kind of my focus too. So, like, learn the strategies, the ideas, learn them. Sure. If you do not connect with people, it's going to be impossible.
Yeah. So you started going here before, I think I cut you off, but as we think about innovation, I'd like for folks to hear how you define innovation in education. And then also a little bit about, what are some common misconceptions that people have about innovation? Because I love how you define it and what you're going after.
Yeah, it's simple. It's new and better ways of teaching and learning, right? And I would add leadership in there, new and better ways of teaching, learning, and leadership. And the emphasis has to be really on not the new, but the better, It has to be better than what we were doing before. And I think that is a simple thing. And the reason why I try to make this idea of innovation, which some people can make very complex, really simple, is because people are like, you know what? I actually do that. Like, I was doing this reading strategy. It wasn't working with my kids. So I, you know, kind of changed this, morphed this. And then I did this little different thing. And now it's actually serving my students better. So the idea is that when people see they're already being innovative, they're more likely to continue doing that. Whereas the notion of innovation is really for the select few, then that's who's going to continue doing it, the select few. And the biggest misconception with innovation is that innovation equals technology. If I use technology, I am innovative. And if you look at, and this is a self-inflicted issue in education, and I'll give you an idea. Typically, the people who are the chief innovation officers or the innovation leads in the school districts were formerly the tech people, right? So it was like the director of technology became the chief innovation officer, et cetera. And it's like, why do people connect this? And it's like, well, because you took the tech person and you made them the innovation person. What you didn't do is you didn't take the curriculum person and make them the innovation person. You didn't take the inclusion person and make them the innovation person. And so it's really kind of looking at that. And I joke about this, that I can debunk the notion that innovation equals technology in about 1 second. Does anyone know what a Scantron is? And people are like, right, they do exactly what they did. They start laughing. And I say, do you know what a Scantron actually is? It's accelerated bad practice. And the way that I kind of explain that is never pointing fingers at anyone else but myself and saying, when I was a high school teacher, we got a Scantron in our school. And the second we got that Scantron, what do? And this is, you know, probably my second or third year of teaching. I made everything multiple choice. It had nothing to do with how does this deepen learning? How does this improve our classroom environment? It's like, how do I hate grading. How do I make this easier?
Yep.
Right. And so probably lessened. And I don't think that if you do multiple choice, you know, and I'm always like open. I saw a long Twitter thread. Somebody actually said, you know, multiple choice isn't bad learning. It's the way that we frame multiple choice. And they went through this whole thing. It was pretty long. So I was like, okay, I get it. Sure. Okay. Right. But the way I use that technology, it kind of lended itself to actually making the learning in my classroom worse. And that's where I kind of bought into. So, you know, like you're seeing people really gravitate towards AI. And then you're seeing like the 100 ways you can use AI in the classroom. And it like, none of those are really going to go deep. Cause like if you're doing 100 ways you can use it in an hour, how deep are you getting?
Yep.
And we're just kind of peppering people with information, but is it actually, you know, making us think less? Is it actually hurting us? And I think there's a lot of benefits for artificial intelligence in the classrooms, but we have to be thoughtful in how we use this, or we're going to cause like some of the same issues that we're seeing with much of the technology in our world today. Is we're just kind of just throwing at the kids, playing Lord of the Flies, hoping, you know, the kids get off the island, which they never do, right? And that's kind of the mentality. It's really, how do we do new and better things? And you know, as you and I were saying earlier, it's really how rethinking our leadership strategies, like, and how we do this too, and really embodying that from the superintendent level, the principal level in our schools, so that people are seeing that we're trying some things to really improve the way that we do teaching and learning in our schools.
Well, I like that you named it. When you think about innovation, you generally think in school districts, it's the technology person, right? So let's think about it differently. So that's a good challenge. You also said something in there about not just new, but better, or not better, new. I'm going to slaughter it.
Has to be better, yeah.
It just has to be better, but doesn't necessarily mean it has to be new, right? Because when I hear innovation, what I assume a lot of people think, well, one, technology. Okay, so now I'm out of the technology box. Well, I got to find something new. What's the latest and greatest? So what's your encouragement there to make sure you're not just going after shiny objects all the time?
Yeah, because I think sometimes when we are like, and I kind of, when I say new, there I put it into two spaces, invention or iteration, right? It can be something that we're currently doing that we just change, tweak, or it can be something we're totally not doing at all and we reinvented this. So I'll give you, I actually just wrote about this. I basically years ago, we saw, I went to a conference and we saw, this is like technology is very new and there's like, there's overlap, right? I think that there's way, technology accelerates everything, including bad practice, right? So we really have to be emphasize how we utilize this too. So the school district, this conference I went to, the school basically, or the school districts wanted teachers using technology more. So what they did is they said, we're going to do a program. We're going to open up and we're going to have 50 spots. You do 12 sessions. We'll teach about technology. And at the end of the 12 sessions, you will get a laptop. We will give you a laptop for attending these sessions, right? So I was like, that's interesting. So you're getting 50 people better at technology. They're getting, you know, they're getting some incentive for attending. Interesting. Okay. So I came back, this is when I'm in the role of division principal. And I said to my superintendent, I said, I saw something really interesting at a conference and here's what it is. Can I propose something to you? Give me about a week to like revamp this a little bit. He's like, all right. So do we want technology improving the way we use it? Sure. But it's not really the biggest focus for me. It's really like, how do we actually improve teaching learning? So we're looking at utilizing iPads, right? Mobile devices at the time, which is, you know, like archaic now. But that wasn't really the emphasis. It was kind of like the little carrot we had. So I said, hey, we're gonna actually open this up to 50 people. And what we're going to do is we're going to give you an iPad if you join. And we're going to give it to you at the beginning. We're going to give it to you like 6 months before we even start. And just open the box, do whatever you want with it. We don't really care. We're not monitoring you. If you sign up, we'll give you this iPad. You're going to do, instead of 12, we're doing 6 sessions. Okay. We're going to do 6 sessions. And what you have to do, since we're only doing 6, you have to teach 2 at your own school. So these people get the device before they come to it and we have like conversations. We talk about teaching and learning. I know it sounds weird. We're watching TED Talks together and then we're having conversations in these small groups and really challenging what these people are doing. But then they actually have to go and spread this, right? So instead of doing just 50, we're like, hey, we want 50 people to really rethink teaching and learning and go spread these ideas amongst their schools. But how do we pick the 50 people, right? Like, how do we pick this out? So I worked with all the principals and I said, look, I need you to basically nominate a couple of people. This is the criteria. And this is really important. They have to be influential to other staff members. And they also have to be willing to learn. That's it. They need to be influential to staff members. They have to be willing to learn. Here's what I don't want. Your best tech person, just because they're your best tech person, right? And no offense, some people that are really good with technology aren't the best of people, right? And you know what's funny? Do you know who says that? Tech people. Tech people tell me that. They're like, yeah, I don't like talking to people. I like being in a dark room working on the wires, right?
Yeah, solving the big problem. Okay.
Yeah. So even if they hate technology, if they're willing to learn and they have influence on staff, because you want someone like actually against some of this stuff, who's like, you know what? That's kind of interesting what they're doing there. Yep. And they're like, really? Like that person saying that? And now it starts to change, right? But if it's like, oh, that's a George thing, George just loves tech, then it kind of gets lost. So we took this idea from this one district that we saw. We said, hey, there's some really good structure here, but how do we actually make great learning go viral in our school? How do we take this idea and really kind of spread how this can learn? So that was really the focus on what we did. Instead of just doing 50 people, we want like basically make great learning go viral in our schools. We do that through people. We do that through these conversations. We do this through people who have influence on their schools. So like, it's kind of looking at some of these things because, and I make this joke all the time I talk, that how will you actually know this is an effective talk? How do we measure that? Is that if I give you a bunch of stuff that you can do Monday with your students, that's how we always like, hey, oh, I got like so many great ideas. I'm going to do that Monday with my kids, right?
Yep.
And then I joke and I say, do you know any group of people in the world who want to be told exactly what to do the next day who also hate being told what to do? It's literally the same people. Like, hey, I want you to tell me exactly what to do Monday, but don't you dare tell me what to do. It's the same people. So my focus is I'm just sharing some ideas with you. You have to figure out how do you utilize them and actually leverage them to your community. Because I don't know your community. You do. I'm not the expert music teacher. You are. So don't ask me how this applies to music. Ask yourself, how does the stuff he's doing, how do I actually iterate this to my music class? Because you are the expert. I'm just someone sharing some ideas. And I think that really kind of, you know, empowers people to find their own solutions, right? And, you know, this is probably, you know, kind of going back to the Covey, one of the books that really influenced me was like Leader in Me. And we were looking at, and I know, like, I'm not like, you didn't tell me to say this. It was like, how do we, our focus was spreading leadership throughout the district. It wasn't, let's get 50 people good with iPads. It's like, hey, let's actually get people to think differently about teaching and learning and then spread those ideas. And they already have that influence and let's leverage them. They don't have to have a title. They just have influence. And that's, right. That was like the mentality of what we were doing.
Well, it sounds like I'm loving peeling back the layers with you, because I think as you talk about the people, so finding the right people, right? So a lot of times it's like, instead of just letting them box these folks in, it's technology. It's got to be the person who loves technology. Go. As you're thinking about fostering a community of innovation, I guess my question for you is, what role do relationships and collaboration play in, I don't know, like fostering that innovation? Like, yeah. I just didn't think of it. Like, one is human versus technology, right? And yep. Now it's like, how do relationships play in creating more innovation in your schools or district?
Well, you know, in Innovator's Mindset, I talk about this. And it's funny because I got really challenged by someone. I know they're like, why are you so focused on relationships and innovation? I said, well, how likely is someone to try something new if they don't think you have their back, right? Like, if you're like, hey, we want you to take risks, we want to try something new, but if you screw up, we're going to fire you. Probably not the best incentive. I'm just going to kind of stay in my lane, not try anything different in that process. But it's like I said earlier, we had a lot of conversation about this. I wanted people that would push back on this coming to those sessions, because first of all, I don't know if I'm right. Right. So that's part of it. Like, maybe I'm doing something wrong. Maybe there's something I'm not seeing that they are, but they have a lot of influence. And there's a tweet. I wish I could reference who this is. It was like one of my favorite tweets I saw.
Yeah.
They said, hey, you know, at the end of the year, I want to hear from the valedictorian and also the worst academic student. Let's get both sides of the story. that's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's pretty accurate, right? And it's the same thing. Like, even like we do student leadership conferences, or we have student conferences, right? We want to hear student voice. Who do we send? We send the kids that we think are not going to embarrass us and say something bad. They're like, school is just perfect the way it is, right? And that will make us look really good. But you should really hear from the kids who are, you know, pushing back and challenging on some of the stuff. Like, I don't like this. This is why I dropped out. This is why I didn't finish. Deidre Raymer, she's superintendent in South Milwaukee. Very good friend of mine. Amazing. I was there working with her staff, her leadership team one day. She actually brought in a group of students who either dropped out of high school or chose alternative programs to sit and talk to the principals and say, this is why we left. This was the issue. And it was like one of the most informative things is that, like, who are we actually asking when we have these conversations? Are we asking the people who totally agree with us? And I think when you're creating a space to be openly challenged, to be openly pushed, that's where you get some of the best ideas. Like, I think innovation is really crucial to the work that we're doing, I hate when people talk negatively about traditional practices. I think there's some really good traditional practices in schools. Like, you'll never hear me saying, don't have kids do times tables. You don't do spelling tests. And people will say, well, you have spell checker. Like, you can, you know, spell check. I'm like, yeah, but you got to be in the vicinity of the word for that to be even close, right? Can't like just slap the keys and hope for the best. Like, we want to teach some basic skills. But that is like basically a ceiling or a floor that we're creating, but we're really re-envisioning what the ceiling can be. And that's where the innovation. So, you know, I used to use this terminology, like, you know, once, you know, our traditional teachers, like our traditional spaces, and I use that word specifically to mean bad, but traditional is not necessarily bad. And the example I always give is storytelling is literally one of the best teaching practices you can have and probably the oldest. But do we see it as a traditional practice or do we see it as a good practice? So it's not negating things that could work that were done for generations, but it's also saying like, hey, some of this stuff is not serving some of the students that we have in front of us. We have to relook at this. So if you say to me like, hey, we've been doing this, it works for 90% of our kids. My first question would be, what are you doing for the other 10%? Like, how are you reaching them? So it is really kind of understanding who do you serve, what their strengths are, what their abilities are, and how do you bring out the best in them? And if you don't really know people, how do you actually put them in a space where they're innovative? How do you actually encourage them to be in that space? Because you don't really know their strengths. You don't know really what they're good at. I think innovation, and we had this conversation before, I think innovation is a word districts use for PR purposes more than a focus.
Yeah, I told you I felt that way sometimes. What I find interesting is I told you this in our kind of pre-call is that I can tell why your clients probably enjoy working with you. One, it's very individualized because you like to learn who they are and what they're about, right? As opposed to you pontificating. Two, you actually seek to be challenged, which is really refreshing because as a consultant coming in, that's someone who you want to work with, right? Someone who's like, yeah, gotta go give and take. As I think about my friends who are district leaders right now, and maybe they're leading a tough school or a challenging district or something, right? They are the type of people, the ones I'm thinking of right now, are the type of people who enjoy being challenged in the way that you're discussing. However, I think sometimes, I know I've done this and I know that they have done this, they have not created a space to be challenged openly because they are worried about how that creates a negative culture, right? So like if you're at a staff meeting and you're trying to seek feedback and you let a few folks that have shown a propensity to be negative and to take it in a different route. My question is for you, how do you balance that? What encouragement or what parameters do you suggest that they create so that they can create more of an environment where the challenging is normal and it's productive?
Well, let's say you have some challenging people like that are very negative. They might not do it in the staff meeting, but they're doing it right after.
Right.
Right? So yep. I'd rather them do it in the staff meeting. Right? Let me address it. And I used to say this to my staff, I cannot solve problems that I do not know exist. So if you got a problem, tell me. Tell me what's going on. I'll help you solve it. But do not complain behind my back because that doesn't actually solve anything. You complain all you want, but when you're done complaining, guess what? Still a problem. We got to actually figure out a way forward. So I think that's kind of the ability. And there is almost a knock on confidence. Like confidence is a bad thing. I think confidence is crucial to leadership. I think arrogance is an issue. I think insecurity is an issue. And sometimes confidence will look like either one of those things. Me having confidence is saying, hey, disagree with me. Like, I'm not going to be upset about it because I don't know everything. And me being able to say, I don't know everything is a very confident measure. Me trying to not let you talk is either an insecurity thing or an arrogance thing, right? Ooh. Because I don't want, if you show me up, then I'm going to look bad. I'm not trying to, you know how I look really good is when our school does really well. That's when I look good. That's the thing with leadership. Like, I know you play sports and if you played sports, you got an ego. You have to have a little bit of ego, you know? And I know you said your dad reffed. If your dad did not have an ego, there's no way you could, like, you have to have people telling you how stupid you are and you go like, no, I'm actually right. I'm actually right. You don't know anything. Yep. Because if you have no ego, you will not last as a referee. There's no way, right? You have to know when people are yelling at you, yeah, I actually did the right thing. But it is kind of that, It is that creating that space to do this. And like whenever I do these sessions, whenever like go to a district, I really try to find out what their questions are. I encourage them to challenge me because they're saying this anyway. They're saying it behind the scenes, but then I give them that space to do it. And then sometimes I'm like, you know what? Like I never thought of that. And they're like, oh, that's like, or like, nah, I don't agree with you. And here's why I don't agree with you. And people are like, you know what? That person like totally needed to be kind of put in their place. And they'll say it to me. And I joke with districts about this. I do that all the time. I know it's a little bit different because if you're really bothered by it and you hate me, I'm leaving. It doesn't really matter. I won't see you the next day. But you have to create that space. But I used to do that with my staff all the time. But I'd also honor them in this way. And some people want to like that I say this. I say, look, if I give you something and I tell you, hey, I'm open to conversation about this, that means I'm open to conversation. It doesn't mean that how I present it to you is the way we're going to go. Tell me why it's wrong. Tell me what we need to do differently. Push that. But if I present something to you and I know it's not changing, I'm going to tell you that straight up because I'm not going to waste your time. I'm not going to waste your time thinking that all your feedback you're going to give me is going to change this. And it's not because of me sometimes, it's because the district actually, or the province or the state is saying we have to do this. So I'll let you vent. If you want to vent, it's going to be a waste of time because I can't do anything. But sometimes we just need to vent. But if I'm saying I'm open to the conversation, and I actually had this one time, I was very adamant about something at my school. And it was about something that was happening at recess. And basically 70% of the staff disagreed with me. And the other 30% were terrified of the 70% and they would not say anything publicly. Ooh. So we had this meeting and I'm like, and I said this, look, I actually don't agree with the majority of you right now, but I opened myself to this. This is the consensus. We'll try it your way for a little bit and see how it goes. And my assistant principal was like, I know that was hard for you, but I so appreciate you did that. I'm like, well, I can't say that I'm open to this feedback. And then they give it to me. And I said, no, I'm good. Yeah. I don't agree with you. And it was like, it was hard. It was hard for me too. Right. I want to tell you this story. Cause I know you mentioned your dad was a ref, and this will tell you kind of who I am. Right. I'm ref in college basketball. You might have known the story because I know you said you listen to my podcast. I was ref in college basketball. It's like one of my very first games ever. And it's very terrifying. You have very experienced refs. I'm new. There's three people refing. And the first quarter goes by. So they're playing FIBA rules. There's four quarters. I don't make a call, not a call. And I'm like, what is going on? Like, am I bad? You know, and like three people, it's sometimes you just don't get calls in your area. So I'm like, oh, I must, like, something's going on here. Like, I'm not doing my job, whatever. So anyways, there's a play and I call a foul and it's not a foul. This is not a foul. It was such a terrible call. I called it with confidence, right? Like, I'm very confident about it. Coach starts yelling at me, ref, ref. I'm like, coach, I'll talk to you first stoppage of play. And so I know I screwed up. And so he, you know what he does? He calls a timeout. He's like, we're going to stop play right now so I can yell at you. Right?
I might have done this as a fifth grade basketball coach last week. Yeah.
He needed to yell at me, right? So we go to center, he calls a timeout. He's like standing out like halfway in the court. He's yelling at me and I start going there, veteran referees, I'm the rookie. And I start walking to them. They're like, do not go over there because they know I screwed up. I'm like, no, I'm good. I'm good. So I walk right up to him and he's about to start yelling. I said, coach, there is nothing to yell at me about. That was a terrible call. I apologize. I get it right. And he's like, all right. And he's just like, that was it. And like the ability to say, I screwed up. I did something wrong here and I'll get better. What are you going to say? Yeah, you screwed up. Yeah, I just told it. Hey, we agree. Why are we fighting? I told you I screwed up. That was a terrible call. And he just like, and I was like, kind of like, yeah, you just wasted a timeout, man. Like, no, that was a terrible call. I got you. And that to me is like, leaders have to be able to say like, yeah, I screwed up there. That was, you know, that was my mistake. Or, hey, you know, we said we're going this way and we did it, you know, that's part of it too, is that you have to be comfortable saying I'm wrong. And that's not, that actually, I think that's a pretty confident thing to be able to say is like, I'm wrong and I'll get it right. Like, yeah, I'm wrong. Everyone's wrong.
I totally agree. I'm actually curious now that you kind of gave me some insight today about your past with Franklin Covey content. Yeah. And even again, people who are listening probably won't believe my ignorance to that part of your work, like with us. Yeah. I'm just curious as you like think about, because I'm fascinated with your content, right? So
yeah,
as you think about your journey, how was your journey with Franklin Covey content influence your approach to teaching, leading, and consulting? So all the great things that you're doing, how has that been part of the influence for the great work you're doing today?
Yeah, I think part of it too is you really have to look at long-term relationships, like how you connect with people, how people feel valued. One of the things, so I'm the change guy, right? I don't say I'm the change guy, but people see me like, hey, we're trying these new changes that we need him to come in.
Yeah, for sure.
So I actually, people ask me this question. If you're a new principal, new superintendent, what's the first thing you change, you know, if you're there? My answer is always the same. It was the same 10 years ago. It'll be the same 10 years from now. My answer is nothing. I would not change a thing. What I would do is I would actually get to know everyone on my staff. And I know this sounds weird. I'd make a spreadsheet. I'd make a spreadsheet and I'd say, who is this person? And then right beside that, I have a column and say, what's this person really good at? And I would not change anything until I, this is really important, till I know what they're really good at, every individual, and they know I know what they're good at. So it's not just important that I know it, they have to know I know it. And that's when we start, you know, maybe thinking differently about some of the things we do in an organization. Because me coming into an organization, like a lot of times it's all about the vision of the leader, not the vision of the community. So really kind of understanding that and who you serve and building that long-term vision, because you're not there to change things in like a month.
Yep.
You're there for long-term sustainable change, cultural change. And the reason you do that is because if people come there, if you're coming to a new organization, people think you're trying to fix them, they're going to fight you. If people know they're valued, they're more open to being challenged. And I think that's where I'm really kind of doing this. And there's so much stuff that I kind of learned through, you know, kind of the focus, you know, through Covey. One of my favorite Coveyisms, I think I've quoted it in several books, is that like leadership is about people, management is about things. So one of my pet peeves is like, oh, we don't need managers, we need leaders. I'm like, I actually need both. You need to be both. You need to act as, you can have all the vision in the world that you want, but what do you have to serve the people? So like even in What Makes a Great Principal, we actually talked about five pillars that make an effective principal. The last one we listed was visionary. And a lot of people think it would be the first one. The last one is, who are the people you serve? What do you have access to? What's in your community? What are they really good at? Kind of understanding that, because you have to be able to, like we talked about resource maximizer, that what do you have access to, which is the, you know, management is about things, leadership is about people.
Yep.
But one of the things I remember in the trainings I used to do, there's a video and we'd have a conversation about it and talk about like long-term relationships. I don't know if you've ever seen this. I don't know if they still utilize this. It was such a great message. And I think about it because I travel quite a bit and I always rent cars. And it talked about that basically you, someone goes to a car, there's a CEO talking about this. He actually goes in and he comes in, his car is back a day plus an hour. So then the car company says, I actually remember the car company, but I won't say who it is, says, hey, we have to charge you for 2 days. It's like, I'm like an hour late. You're charging me for a whole other day. And they're like, well, that's how it is. So basically he's like, so now I'm never going to rent with you again. Like, why would I rent with you again? So the short term win they get is they get 50 more bucks on that. What they lose is years and years of loyalty.
Yep.
And that to me is really, that's why you build those relationships and you really connect with people, because you're trying to build long-term. You're not just coming in there trying to like clean house, and you're trying to really kind of understand who do you serve and really have that pride. And you want to put people in a position where they are successful. And I don't know if, have you ever, do you know what I'm talking about
specifically? I do. That's one of my favorite videos.
Yeah. I remember that video. And I remember like, I always think about that every time, like there's a place I park. And this happened just the other day. I'm like, you're lucky I have no other choice. I would like go somewhere else.
Yeah. Right? Parking at the airport drives me crazy as well. Yeah. There was a podcast, I can't remember who it was with. Maybe it was the Griffin Spaulding superintendent. I think that I'll cross paths, but like what I love was the debate, and you kind of hinted at it there, which is, how do you balance like what to do with a visionary leader, right? So we hire this principal to change things. So the world that I came from, and it's one that I'm sure you've worked in plenty of times, is we had schools that are on a failing list, and nobody wants to send their kids to a school or a district that has failing schools. And so we have to get change immediately. So I love and believe, and the reason I came to Franklin Covey is that like, I believe that real change is long lasting. It's not just overnight. Anybody can get those quick changes. But how do you balance that? Because I think that was nuanced of like, you know, not just being a vision leader. Like, this is my vision. Let's go. You said, let's go find out who you are and build a team. That's great. How do you balance that with a requirement of urgency and immediate results?
Well, people have to see you changing first. They have to see you trying different things. So people, I work with administrators, superintendents. I said, this is the worst thing you do after today is that you are with me today and we go through this full day workshop and you spend 8 hours with me. And then you go back to your staff and say, you know what? I actually did this workshop with this guy from Canada. Here's the new stuff you're going to be doing now. That's the worst thing you'd be doing. What you should do is, hey, I actually went to this workshop with it. Here's some things I'm going to do differently. Here's some things I'm going to change in my practice. That if you are asking people to change, they have to see you do it first. Because it's really easy, like, hey, you take risks, but people don't know how I got to where I'm at. Whereas in all honesty, you can see this, there's a through line. Like during COVID, I don't know if you know about this about me, I lost like 120 pounds, right?
No.
And I documented like what I was doing, how I was getting there. And it made me think differently about things, right? Like how can I say like, hey, don't accept the status quo in your life while I'm, you know, 120 pounds overweight eating like garbage. So like I've kind of accepted the status quo in some areas of my life. So weirdly enough, it made me more empathetic. Like, hey, maybe there's a reason someone's really holding on to some practice the same way I was holding on to unhealthy eating habits, right? So we have to kind of model this too. I don't think I've ever told this story publicly, for sure not recorded. I actually had an opportunity when I was in Canada to be, it's not called superintendent in Quebec, it's called director general, which sounds way better, right? Like you're the director general. Like it seems like almost military, but it's a superintendent in Quebec. That's what it is, right? So it was for an English speaking school district in Quebec. Now Quebec, the majority is French is the main language there in that province. So I go through there, they're loving me through the interview process. And they said, we do have a concern. I said, what's a concern? They're like, we don't speak French. I'm like, I'm not understanding. This is an English speaking school district. Why do you need me to speak French? Well, a lot of the families, you know, French is their first language. I said, okay. I said, you know what? There's an opportunity here. So I'm going to come in there and I'm going to be asking people to try different things to actually, you know, really challenge the way that they're thinking about teaching and learning. So that I see what you're talking about as a negative, as an opportunity for me. The opportunity here, I will commit to this. I will actually document my learning of French on YouTube so you can watch me learning French. So you can see this because I say it's a really important aspect and that I learn this. So people, if I'm asking people to try something new, they should see me doing it. What a great opportunity. I'm going to say like, hey, this is really important to the board. You're going to watch me. I'm going to like document. You're going to see my progression of learning the French language through this. And they just couldn't see past that. They're like, no, you gotta speak French right now. So this is probably like, I was like, I'm not getting this job. So I said, do you know the Montreal Canadiens, the hockey team?
Yeah, of course.
Their number one for a coach is not that they're a good coach, but that they can speak French. When's the last time you won a championship? And that was the worst thing you could say to
people. Of course.
It's like, go at the Canadiens. So they're like, this guy's gone. So that was it for me. But that to me is like, I was like, wow, what a wonderful opportunity. Like I'm going to do something extremely challenging in front of everybody. I'm committing to this because I'm going to ask them to change. And so a lot of times we just have people go into these organizations and they are just seen as all knowing. How did you get there? How did you get to that path? And we rarely show the path. We just show the end point. Right? One of my favorite quotes ever, it takes years and years of hard work to become an overnight success. We often see the end point, we don't see the process. So I've really been documenting the process. So even, you know, probably for the last, I think 2008 or 9, I started blogging and I talk about my learning. I talk about, hey, I'm struggling with this. I've actually taken old blog posts that I've written and said, hey, here's this blog post I wrote in 2010. Here's the idea that I really still believe in, But my approach was terrible. And here's why it was terrible. So I actually like fight myself in my old blogs because I'm trying to show like, hey, I'm progressing. I'm trying to get better. I'm trying to learn. That's what I think is really missing in a lot of leadership is that people don't show the journey. They just show the end point.
So true. There's a song that I have my kids listen to. It's one of my workout songs. It always talks about, it's like they see you on the mountain, that they don't see you on the climb, right? And we keep coming back to the climb is everything. You said something about taking risks, right? Yeah. It's something that like I used to frustrate me to no end, and still does today, is you have a lot of great educators who limit themselves because of their fear of taking risks or their just desire to be rule followers to an nth degree. In the innovator's mindset, it's the only question I'll ask you about this because we could go really deep and I would keep you all day, but you emphasize empowering educators and students to take risks, right? Like how can schools create that environment where risk-taking feels safe and it feels normal, or it's normalized in a way to, that's just what we do. That's how we operate.
Yeah. And risk is one of those words that people just throw out and they don't, what does that mean? What does risk actually mean? So I define it. So this is the way I define risk. Risk is moving from a comfortable average in pursuit of an unknown better. Okay. So that's all it is. Okay. I'm not asking you to jump off buildings. I'm not asking you to do something that's, you know, physically dangerous. It's how do you move from a comfortable average in pursuit of an unknown better? So once you articulate that, people start to like, oh, okay, that's you know, that's not, doesn't seem so bad. But then I say, okay, let's think about this. Not only are we risk averse professionally, but personally. And I'll give you an example. And I do this all the time. I ask people, how many of you have ever stayed in a relationship like way too long? And you should see like some people's hands. Yeah, right.
They do. Not my current wife.
They put their hands up really, really quick. And I joke, I say, listen, I hope it's not right now. Cause if it's right now, I do not want anyone going home tonight and say, hey, you know what? I heard a guy from Canada today. We need to talk. Like, do not bring me into this conversation this evening. I don't want nothing to do with it. But I want you to really think, why did you stay? Cause I've done it. I know many of you have done it. Why did I stay? I don't want to move my stuff. Like, we had so much stuff together. You know, we have mutual friends. And then what you do is you move on from the relationship and then you start looking back and you're like, oh, I wasted so much time doing this. And so then once people start, now they see how not taking risk actually is sometimes the biggest risk, right? Actually staying where you're at is actually sometimes the worst thing you can do. So now they start seeing it on a personal level. I say, do we do the same things with our teaching? Do we actually stick with a practice we see is not working with kids, but then continue to do it because we're comfortable and it makes us feel good. So, but yeah. I also challenge people and I also say this, look, if you're doing something that was done 100 years ago and it's still working, kids, keep doing it. Like, yeah. I have no issue with that. It's the things that we're doing that you see is not working with kids. Why do we keep doing this stuff? Right. And I guess I go to this on the other side of sometimes this is kind of going back to the innovation question. Sometimes we do new stuff, but it doesn't work for kids either. Why are you doing that? Like, is it because it's new? So, you know, you're seeing a lot of these things. It's like, hey, we're trying this thing, but behavioral issues are going up. Okay. Is it maybe because you're doing that thing? Like, is it maybe that? Like, we have to ask that question. I'm not saying it is, but is there something you're doing in your practice? Like, if you're saying, hey, we really want to focus on behaviors and that new practice that you're doing, the behaviors are getting worse. I would step back and say, hey, is this thing that we're doing actually causing the issue?
Yep.
Is it making things worse? So like, maybe we need to ask that question. So new doesn't always equal better. And I think that's why I say like, it has to be new and better, not just new or better.
I love it.
It is kind of taking a step back and asking that too. So I think, you know, kind of go back to your original question. First of all, it's making risk not so scary. Seeing how actually not taking risks can be detrimental. And like putting people and saying like, hey, sometimes I was terrified of doing this new thing. And then once I did it, I was way better off and saying, okay, now it's like, hey, but once I did that thing, it wasn't as bad as it seemed. And then my life was better, right? As I get older, and you can kind of tell by the gray in my beard, like I know most of my regrets are things that I wish I would have done in the past, not things that I did. That's most of my regrets. I'm like, I wish I would have done that thing. And so I use some of the some of my oldness to remind people like, hey, if you stick here, that actually is probably the worst risk you can take.
Yeah, I think so. I was excited to talk to you for a lot of reasons today. And I think people, as long as we've been talking, can clearly see where your passion and sincerity comes from. And authenticity is something really big to me. And so your ability to, one, just be authentic at all times, like you said, whether people like it or not, is like my favorite attribute for you. But also it's like, look in the mirror before it's anybody else, right? Yeah. So when I think about today, it was understanding that innovation is a human endeavor, not just about technology, right? When I think about innovation myself, when I think about people who've struggled with it, it's like they've been scared of risk. And I think you do a great job of helping people out of that. Another area that I've run into personally and seen a number of times, particularly within education, is something that you address in innovation inside the box, right? Yeah. And it's really about focusing on innovation within the world of constraints, right? Everybody can tell you why they can't do something. So what advice do you have for those educators that are working in systems with limited resources and rigid structures?
Yeah. And you know, let's talk about the rigid structure. A lot of times I say like, hey, let's say you have an administrator, right? And it's leadership is not a title, it's influence, right? It's actually influence to get people to move forward in a positive direction. So I have a principal who's terrified of, you know, going outside of a rigid structure. I want to try something new in my classroom that I can see his benefit. So you go in to have that conversation, you know, like, hey, I want to try this new thing. No, you're not going to try this thing. Okay. Not a good way to start a conversation. The conversation that I encourage people to say is like, hey, I know this is an emphasis of yours. I know it's an emphasis of mine, but we're both here to do what's best for kids. Correct? And they're going to say what you say. Yeah. They're going to be like, nah, not really. Right. They're going to say yes. Okay. So because you and I both had an emphasis, here's the thing that I want to try that I really think is beneficial to kids. And here's why. So now it is your job to articulate why is this better for kids? You've already got them agreeing to it. Right. Like you kind of painted them in that corner.
Right.
There's a little trick there. So like, I've got you there. And then it's like, okay, now that since you and I are both here to do what's best for kids and I've really articulated why, so how do we make this happen? And I think that's really kind of putting people in that situation because here's the opposite. Okay. So I worked a lot with IT departments. Someone goes, and this is why this becomes an issue. And this is why people are terrified. They go to a conference, they see this new technology. It's awesome, right? Just cool. And it's like some vendor selling it to you that's used it a million times and it's just like so slick and just awesome. And then you go and you're like, oh, it's going to be like groundbreaking. This is awesome. So then you go and you beg the IT department, can we put this on all our computers? Can we have this on all our devices? Like I don't know. This is going to be a lot of, you know, time and effort to put this on. No, but I saw it at a conference. It's so good. It's like amazing. Then they spend hours and hours putting this on a device. And then you use it once in class, like, eh. And then you don't use it again. And it's like, that's why people get, is that they've been burned by it. Even like leadership too. And like kind of understanding from their viewpoint, sometimes we like just want to try this new thing because it's not new, but we haven't really articulated. This is why I'm really big on the emphasis on really being a learner first. Is like, I want to go, like the whole reason I have my blog, the whole reason I started writing was because we want to do student portfolios in our schools. And I was like, we don't know what we're doing. None of us have done this as kids. We have no idea of what we're doing. I'm going to go first. I'm going to go through it. I'm going to make my own, see what the benefits are, what the negatives are, go through the process. I will be able to articulate this. And as a staff, we're going to learn it. And then we're going to teach it to our kids. So we know from the viewpoint of a learner. So now we can like go through the whole process. It wasn't, I just saw it at a conference. I'm like, ooh, this be cool. It was like, no, I went through the process. And I was like, wow, this is like making me think. A lot of these stories I'm sharing with you, you can find in my blog, because I don't really talk about stuff until I write about it, because then it sticks in my mind. And that was all through the process of the whole I didn't start blogging because I'm like, I want to become a speaker one day. And it was like, hey, how do we figure this out? Like, how do we do this with our students? And I was like, this is awesome. Like, this is really incredible. And then somebody read my stuff and like, you should come speak. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? And they're like, yeah, come speak at our school. I'm like, oh, I guess I could. What's your fee? I'm like, you're going to pay me? You're gonna pay me for this? So then all of a sudden this door opens for me that I didn't even know existed. So now I've gone through this process. I'm like, okay, so I see the benefits of learning. I see that it can open doorways. How do we actually teach our kids to open doorways for themselves intentionally? And so that was like the process, is that do we go through the learning ourselves first, right? And kind of going through that process. And you know what? It is going to take a little bit more time, but then you're going to actually kind of have a better understanding of long-term is going to have a benefit. I think, you know, kind of going back to this notion, like, hey, we do have constraints. It goes back to knowing who you serve and what their benefit, like what's most beneficial to them. So again, you might not like that I'm saying this, but I'm right. So this is like, I'm going to tell you something is right. Not every kid's going to be good at math. There's nothing you can do that will get every kid good at math.
I used to teach trigonometry. That hits harder than you know.
Right. There's nothing you can do to get every kid good at math. And I don't, you know why? Like, I'll tell you, I know this from personal experience. You would never get me good at math. There's no way, because I don't want to be good at math because I don't care. I don't care. Like, there's certain things in math, and there has to be a want, right? And, you know, some math teachers are like, oh, but math, right? Sure. But do you know what? Some of those same math teachers would never play sports. You and I have directly benefited from playing sports. So why are we trying to make every kid the exact same, but only exactly the same as us, right? So like, some kids are going to be really good at math. I'm not going to be. Great. They'll be the math kids. I'll be the sport kid. I'll be the writing kid, whatever. So my big emphasis is, how do we ensure that every kid is not good at the same thing when they walk out of school, but they're good at something? It's very different terminology. So, but the constraint is, for example, there's nothing you can do to get me good at science. Nothing. There's nothing. Because I don't want to be good at science. I know science is important. I'll leave that to the scientists.
Yep.
But I still, that teacher still, you know, has a constraint. They got to teach a curriculum. There are probably certain academic requirements. So one of the things that I've used is I give these five questions, and I say, like, hey, what, like, here's five simple questions. You Google it, you can find it. It's like five questions to ask your students at the start of the school year. So one of the questions is, like, what do you look for in a teacher, right? What are you passionate about? Now, you and I, probably grade six and up, basketball would have been our answer. So you know this. So if you're in an English class and you can get this kid basketball books, he's more likely to read the book.
Yep.
Right? So my favorite writer, who is probably my biggest influence, is Rick Riley, who I used to read his back page article in Sports Illustrated. I would rush to Sports Illustrated, turn it right to the back. There's a one pager. It was very emotional, story driven sports story. That's how I tell education stories. So, but here's the interesting thing. What was I told I was not allowed to bring to class? Sports Illustrated. This writer who most influenced me was also the person I could not bring into a classroom. Right. So, you know, I bet you those English teachers are like, wow, there's no way they're like, that kid's going to be a writer someday. Like, he's going to write books. No one would have thought that. But I loved reading certain things. So let's say you have to teach science. You have a kid who wants to become a YouTuber, right? Or, you know, do social media. So instead of saying, like, hey, that's adorable, but I got to teach science, why not say, like, hey, I know this kid wants to become a video creator. I got to teach a science concept. Why don't I actually get the kid to explain the science concept in a video? Really tap into what their passion. And you know what? If that kid has to teach that concept to the entire world, they're probably going to know it inside out. So now I'm tapping into their strength. They're probably never going into the field of science, but they could become a YouTuber. So now I'm actually getting them to understand the content while developing their strengths. That's how I get to look at it too, right? Now, I know you can't do this all the time. I know there's like limits to this, but the more opportunity kids have to do things that really, you know, they're empowered by, they're passionate by, the more likely they'll have to do the stuff that sucks too. There's a lot of stuff I do that sucks, that I don't like doing, but I do a job I love. And it's way easier to do the stuff that sucks when it leads to something you love. And that's what we're trying to get, you know, teachers to think about.
I love that. You know, for those of you, this is probably weird for me hosting a podcast saying you need to go listen to your podcast, but I genuinely mean it. I love how you interact with people. I love the people you have. I love the conversations you have and the topics you address. I think one question I want to ask before we get to our rapid fire questions is there a question either that you like to ask often or that you wish people or I would ask you of you right now? Is there something that, like, you know, for instance, when I go out to speaking events or whatever, people ask me, you know, that the one, what's your walk-up song? And I'm like, oh man, I should be more prepared since I make everybody else do it. And so I guess, is there that question from your podcast or one that you just wish I would have asked today that you would go with right now?
Yeah. Like one of the questions, you know, that's like, is this like the interview question? Like, what's a question you have of us?
Yeah. 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 Basically like not, but that's hysterical.
But one of the questions I ask people when they're like talking to me about bringing me in, work with their groups, things like this, is this is what I say to them all the time. If the day or my work with you, if we were to be successful, what would that look like to you? Like, tell me what your vision of that is at the end point, right? So give me that. And one of the things I do, I have people on my podcast with groups I'm going to work with in the future. And there's multiple reasons I do this. I'm not a big meeting guy. I don't like meetings. So they're going to make me talk to them anyway. So I might as well get some content out of it and kind of learn from them, kind of understand that. And what's beautiful, I get to learn more about their district, all the things that are happening. But then they share the podcast with their district and say, hey, this guy's coming. You want to learn about him, but guess what? And what I'm trying to do is really highlight the person that they're like, I didn't know that about my superintendent. Right. And so that's part of it too. But then when I say to them, like, how would I be successful to you? What would that look like? Now it puts like a responsibility on me to, if I'm like, nah, I'm not doing that. It's probably not going to be good. But now it's like, what are the expectations for me that day? Right. And part of that too, because I want to know when I'm working with people, you know, when I'm doing stuff with them, what is me joining you being successful? What does that look like to you? So we have that parameter set immediately. So I know what I'm achieving to, and then you're going to set that parameter. And then my goal is to obliterate it, to go way beyond what you're asking, to go like, wow, that was like way better. Right. Well, so that to me is always something that I try to articulate. Cause I'm sure this is the Covey philosophy and my belief, education, just like my parents at a restaurant, it's a service industry, right? It's how do I serve you? How do I bring out the best in you? How do I get you walking on there feeling truly, not that you can, make a positive impact, but you have the ability to do so, right? Not that you're like, I'm so inspired, I don't know what I'm going to do. But like, yeah, like I have ideas, I have ways I can do this, and I can see it in myself that I can make this positive change. And that's, I want to put people in that situation where I know what that looks like to them.
So I'm sure you have plenty of stories along those lines, but as you think about either a recent story or one that just sticks out to you most right now in this conversation, I'd love to know, like, what's a success that you've seen either with a district or a school from your consulting, right? Where you've come in and just been so proud of the work that those folks did in your journey with them.
Yeah. One of the places I think of quite a bit is Comac Schools in Long Island, New York. And it was interesting because this had been like probably years in the work for me to join them. They actually hadn't had someone come in from outside the organization in a while. And I actually had the superintendent on, Jordan Cox, amazing, amazing superintendent. You should, I would highly suggest to get him on the podcast. They're doing some really incredible things there. But he was on my podcast, and he's not a basketball guy or like, and he lives in Long Island. And weirdly enough, I grew up in Canada as a super diehard New York Islanders fan, which is a long story, but he's like, he doesn't even know the team, but we just hit it off immediately. And I worked with them. And one of the things that we really like, I've talked about this, mentioned this several times, really think about leadership differently, right? So I said, my goal is not that I do a really good job speaking. My goal is that this is a game-changing day for you, that this will change the way that you do stuff moving forward. Now, trust me, it wasn't like they were sucking and then I showed up and then now they're doing well. They were doing great stuff already. But like one of the things, this has been the last few years especially, people have been really challenged, exhausted, not feeling appreciated. So I said, okay, when people walk in, we got music pumping, no slow jazz. We got to have some energy. We got to have some vibe. One of the school districts I work with, we got like they got t-shirt guns. They're shooting t-shirts before. Like this is a school. This is not like a massive. This is a school PD day.
Yep.
Why are we here? To help kids. So why don't we have some kids there? So they had kids talk about like start the day off, talk about the impact teachers had on them. They're like emotional, connected. Jordan spoke for a little bit. And I always say this, I don't really care about my intro. Nobody cares about my intro. No one's ever like, you know what? That guy sucked, but he teaches an Ivy League school. So like nobody cares, right? Yeah. All he cares is this guy good. They don't care my accolades or anything. I don't care about my, and when he's like, it almost like knocks you down a peg. I said, spend the time that you do an intro on me, telling me some of your vision, but say it to everybody so I can build your vision into my work. And I'll do it on the fly. Like you could, like you send me no questions, by the way. Right. And if you would have, I wouldn't have looked at them because I get anxiety. I just want to go.
Generally don't just because I want to, like you said, I want to have a conversation.
I don't want to know them. Like I'll start overthinking stuff. So yep. I'll like say, trust me, I'll build your stuff into mine. Right. So you have these people feeling super appreciated, different experience. And I know that like so many of them reach out to me still and talk about things that they're trying in their classrooms. And really, like I said, I think sometimes there's a place where they're like, hey, we're trying this thing. We're a little bit scared. And now they're feeling like, okay, no, let's go. Let's go. And you can see that they were already kind of on a great path, but now they're like, no, we're good to go. And some of the people that, and I did the whole like, challenge me. And we have these conversations and people are challenging. And then I'm like pushing back and forth. We're doing it with like a little bit of laughter or, you know, but there's like some seriousness. And it was just amazing. And I've stayed connected with them and I just see all the stuff that they're doing after the fact, like how they do their professional learning days to like really make people feel appreciated. Cause it's way easier to push people. Like, and think about most professional learning days, people rush there to sit as far away as possible.
Oh, yeah.
Like that's what it is because they're like, this is going to suck. It's going to be a waste of our time. And I want people to think differently about it. Too, like, hey, this is, and plus, like, I challenge leadership. I'm like, do you know why they sit in the back? Because it has sucked. That's why. They're not like, hey, this has been amazing, so I'm going to sit in the back. It's like, hey, this has sucked. That's why I'm sitting in the back. So, like, let's create a different experience for people.
I love that insight. That's something that I try to talk to our team all the time, as opposed to, like, even at teaching, right? So, when we work with teachers, it's don't assume that a student who's acting up just doesn't care, right? Or they're sitting in the back. It's like, it's on us, especially for professional development with the teachers, like to make it more interesting. So you want to come to the front. Like, I'm not taking offense to it. I get it. Right.
Yeah. And like, you know, like there's always some self-responsibility. Like, I don't want to pretend like I get it. Right. But I remember one admin, and this I've had this several times, but there's one conversation in particular. The administrator was saying to me, you know, our teachers are not trying new things. They're like so scared of change. Like they are so focused on like traditional practice. Like it's just, they're driving me crazy. And then I just said, maybe it's you. Maybe you're the issue. And he's like, what? I'm like, well, like your job is to move them forward. Right. So you complaining that they're not moving forward. Are you just going to say the things you're saying louder? Or are you going to rethink the way you're doing stuff? So I'm not saying that they're awesome and you're the problem. I'm saying your job is to help them move forward. Obviously what you're doing is not moving forward. So maybe try something different.
Absolutely. Right?
So like that is the approach, you know? So I think that if I was trying to lose weight and I was doing the same diet, I'm not losing weight. I'm like, yeah, obviously I got to try something different. Right. And that is something people who know me very closely, if I have my mind set on thing, I will try everything to get to that point. Like I won't just do the same thing over and over again. I will like, okay, that's not working. There's maybe that one part of it worked. So I'm going to grab that. And then I'm going to try this thing. Okay. That didn't work. This one thing worked. Now I got two things. So I'm like constantly trying to figure out a new pathway forward. And it's the same thing with leadership. If your people are not moving forward, you can say it's them and it might be them, but it's you because your job is to help them move forward. So try a different strategy, try a different approach, try a different way of doing things. Don't just assume that one day, hey, I've been doing the same thing and all of a sudden it clicked. Right.
Well, I think when you talk like that, it makes it clear to me why you have an affinity towards basketball, because the same reason I do. It's right. Basketball is a game of reaction and counters, right? Cool. So someone does this, I do that, right? So yeah. You go this way. So it's constantly, and as you know, I mean, from even refereeing, but coaching and being and playing it, what worked in the first quarter certainly might not work at halftime or a third quarter, fourth quarter. And so it's key that you always have to be trying to improve, right?
Totally. And like, you know, we ran an offense that we knew it so well that we would run it over and over again until the defending team would start moving along with us.
Yep.
And then you move in a different direction
when
they're expecting stuff and then they don't know what to do. So then they don't know, are they going to do the same direction? Or are they going to do this, right? You always got to iterate. You always got to iterate, and that's how you find success.
Yeah. All right. Real quick, as we wrap up, we got four rapid fire questions. Be as quickly as, you know, answer them as quickly as possible. But I like depth. What's a habit or discipline that you utilize every day or week to be the best version of yourself?
I work out every morning. Doesn't matter. If I have to get up at 3 in the morning to work out, I work out every morning. I cannot function. You know, people say, don't talk to me until I have my coffee. Don't talk to me until I work out.
I love it.
I have to like sweat. And I am this, I'm going to be honest with you. If you are in a gym on a treadmill and I'm beside you, I am sweating on your treadmill. I apologize. I'm the sweatiest human being ever. And I got floppy, sweaty hair and it is like flinging.
I don't have the hair, but yes, I sweat.
I am a sweaty guy. Yeah. But I work out every day. I did not realize how much physical health impacts mental health. So it is, I am a much better human being after I work out.
So as I ask this question, I'll be the one who recommends your books to others. This question is really about you're a consummate learner and you're around a lot of thought leaders. What is a book that you've either, you know, throughout time you've always recommended to people or something that you've come across recently that you think other people should check out?
I'll give you a book that is Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People. It's one of my favorite books of all time. Really, really, it's funny because there's a lot more focus on listening than talking in that book, which a lot of people think it's the opposite. Like I'm trying to convince you as opposed to I'm trying to understand who you are. The second book, and this is a more recent book, and I will say, I really believe every person in administration in schools should read this book, even though it's not an education book, is Unreasonable Hospitality by Will Goddara. Do you know this book?
I've heard of it, but I would be dangerous on talking about it with you.
Okay. So I have a certain connection to it because it's about a guy running a restaurant, wanting it to be the best restaurant possible. I'm a kid that grew up in a restaurant.
Right.
But just really kind of understanding people, but I'm going to sell it to you because I know you're going to love it. So at the beginning of the book, and it's a true story, right? And it's like talks about like how he wants to get his restaurant to be the best restaurant in the world. His restaurant begins with, you're going to so appreciate this. Cause like, as soon as I read this, I'm like, oh, I'm so into this book. His restaurant is named as one of the 50 best restaurants in the world. So he's so excited about this. He's so pumped about it. So he goes to the ceremony where they're honoring the 50 best restaurants in the world. And then they're like, at 50, is your rest like his restaurant? And he's like, oh, like they're numbering them. So he's livid. He's livid that he's only 50 out of the top 50. So his whole thing is how to get to one. Right. Yeah. So that's the competitor in me. I'm like, oh yeah, I'd be the same way. I don't want to be number 10. I want to be one.
Yeah. Right.
So like I knew because you're a sports guy.
Yeah.
That's one thing, you know, you mentioned collaboration earlier. I always talk about the idea of competitive collaboration that I think it's competition is not a bad thing. So if you're a principal and I'm a principal, there's no way I'm going to let your school crush me. There's no way. If your school is crushing my school, it's going to bug me. So there is a little push there. The thing is, can I go to you and say, Dustin, how are you doing this thing? Like, what are you doing here? And will you help me? So like, and if I was crushing your school, I would want you to come over to my school and say like, what are you doing? How are you doing this? And then I would say like, hey, this is what we're doing. And so the competitive collaboration is that we both push and support each other. So that's why I think it's really important. Like, you know, you got to have a little bit of challenge. Like, I don't want to be the weak one. I don't want to be the one that's falling behind. But will, if you came across for help, I'd help you. And I'd hope you do the same for me, right? Typically old school mentality in schools when I first started well, this is what we do at our school, and this is kind of our secret. And that was mentality. So like, it was very like focused on totally just competition, where I feel like we've swung the pendulum where it's all about working with each other. And it's like, well, there's a little bit of that, but I need a little push. I need a little challenge. So like that's, you'll love that book because of that. Cause I knew you lit up as soon as I said that.
I am in. My friends, I was just at a leadership retreat with my team this week. And when I just started talking about fifth grade basketball, they started saying, you're crazy. I didn't realize how competitive you were. So like, yes, it's a game of inches and you got to keep going. So I will download it as soon as we get off this.
Well, the thing about leadership, I think, is which fuels my competition. When I got into leadership, the whole thing when I first, like I said, I have an ego. I want to do well. What I realized in leadership real quick, how I do really well in leadership is I make sure everyone around me does well. That's what really great leaders do. You can still be competitive, but the way you win in leadership is everyone else around you does well because of the work that you're doing.
Totally agree. I love that. All right. This is the one question I prepared you for just because people have said they don't want to be caught off guard. What would your walk-up song be if you had one, or you may actually have one?
Listen, the answer is going to be different than any other answer you got. I promise you, but it's not going to surprise you at all. My walk-up song is not determined by me. The walk-up song is determined by where I am. So for example, I was at the California MTSS conference. Yep. This is in Anaheim, California.
Yep.
You know what song I played? California. California. I said, like, just play it until they start swearing. Don't let the swears happen, right? So like everyone's just going right away, right? You go to like Massachusetts, you're gonna play, you know, a different song. You go to New York, you're gonna play a different song. This is the thing that I'm really like, and trust me, I love that song. And people are like shocked that I actually know it. Like, I am kind of old.
Why are they shocked? I would assume as a whatever. You would definitely love Tupac.
I got a wide range
of
musical interests. The thing is that my family and I just watched this last night. My favorite speaker of all time is Jim Valvano, right? SBs. Yeah, of course. The thing, if you ever watch him speak, the first thing he does when he gets on a stage is he takes the spotlight that's shining on him and shines it on the people in front of him. Mm. And instead of like, what song does George like? I'm like, what song will get these people knowing that I know where I am and that I appreciate it? It's like a rock star saying, hello, Cleveland, right? You acknowledge the people in front of you. So the music will totally like change. The one I was going to do, and I was like, this is not going to work here. And even though it should have, was I just spoke in Chicago, and I want to play the Bulls theme song.
I thought you were going to say that for
There's no words to it, and I bet you a bunch of people would be like, why is he playing this song?
Now.
Right, you're right. And I like, that was the first song. But it's always like, hey, like, what's a, you know, so I always kind of look like, what's a song that I have to know it.
Right? Yeah, of course.
I have to know it. I have to like it, but it is something that it's like, I want to get the people in front of me going. That will get me going. No song will ever get me going as much as I see people being pumped in front of me.
It's funny you say that. My 10-year-old was asking like my opinion of his walk-up song for his little league baseball team.
Yeah.
And I just said, man, first off, it's got to get you in the zone. I like when other people, if I'm walking up to the plate and I see like parents or the other team like popping their head to it, I know they're in my world now. And so I like your approach. I think that's really, really astute.
Yeah, when I did California at the California MTSS conference.
Oh yeah.
It was over.
I had the house down.
They were like, that was it. They're like, oh, because it was like a specifically California centric conference.
Yeah.
I know they all grew up to that song. They all love it. And they weren't expecting it because they were expecting it to be, you know, some like, oh, Canada, I don't know, something, right? Something about maple leaf and syrup. I don't know. So it was, that's how I like to do it.
So one of my,
I got to like the song. That's for sure.
One of my best friends in the world who lives in Toronto played college basketball, I guess at Windsor. He's 6'9". Yeah. And so we joke often about the what his music is or what his musical taste, what I thought it was, until I realized, like, he's just normal. He's just like me. He likes all the things I like.
Yeah. Canadians know way more about Americans the other way around.
Yeah, exactly.
We grew up on American sports. Well, and friends,
my Canadian friends, they know way more, not just about Americans, but the world. But that's a whole nother conversation.
That's a whole conversation. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Last question. You know, again, you're surrounded by a lot of thought leaders. You do a lot of thinking, but also learning. What's the best piece of leadership advice that you've received lately, or that you've come across, or could be on Twitter, right? Like, I just something that like has hit you. Maybe you blogged about it recently, but something that struck you in a unique way that you want to share with folks.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's new. I think it's always kind of understand where you are and who you serve and move backwards from there. Don't try to like impose, you know. I think for me, I spent a lot of time, I used to make fun of lurkers on Twitter. They'll say I'm on Twitter, but you know, I'm just kind of a lurker. I'm like, do you know if you said that about any other aspect of my life, that'd be kind of creepy.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? But on Twitter, it's okay. Like, I just kind of like stare through the window at you. But I try to really spend a lot of time kind of understanding what's going on in the world, what's going on in education, and really try to address. You kind of said it really. Marcus Belin, he's a friend of mine. He's a principal in Chicago. You know, his whole thing is on being his authentic self. I mentor a lot of speakers. And I say, listen, when you go up there, don't be someone else. Just be a little bit louder version of yourself, right? Just a little bit louder, not obnoxiously loud, but just be yourself. If you have to scream to get your point across, it's probably not a good point, right? But be yourself, you know, use your humor. You know, people will read through that really, really quick if you are trying to portray yourself as something you're not. And that to me is that it's way easier to connect with people. Like, we always talk about relationships in education, and we kind of have this notion of like, you need to know the students you serve. You need to know the people you serve. But also, I think what is often missing, people need to know you. And I think, you know, that's why I talk about my family and the influence they had on me. I talk about how much I love sports because, you know, it connects me right away. When Susan started talking basketball, I'm like, oh, it's going to be awesome. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, there's a connection right away because I know you're a basketball guy and I can reference that too. And I think, you know, be yourself, who you are, and just, you know, that to me is be your authentic self, and that will always get the most of the people you serve.
Yeah, since we both share a similar affinity towards meetings, I will just reach out to you separately to talk through some basketball advice right now as I'm putting stuff together for my fifth grade team.
I coached for a long time too. Like, I played. They don't pay you to coach in Canada though. So I was like, if they're going to yell at me, I'm reffing.
Yeah, I totally agree. all right, I will say this, and this is a compliment. I guess first, thank you for spending so much time with us. But this is certainly the longest episode, and I think I would just say, like, as I said, you may not know it's a compliment, but I wouldn't have stayed in that much long, you know, that long, if I did not really just enjoy everything about hanging out with you. So it's no secret to me, after spending a couple minutes with you before this even started, why you're successful, why you're having impact. But as I've gotten to know you more today, I would just say, as people are trying to explore you, one, I've already seen other podcasts, go to your books. But I think the one thing I really appreciate is you're about others. It's like a servant leadership about you that I think is refreshing. And I think people should definitely look into and get to know more about.
I've never lost out by helping other people ever. Yep. You know what I mean? Like, I've never said, hey, here's this awesome person. They're like, yeah, screw George.
Yeah.
It's like, no, I think when you elevate others, it, you know, secondarily elevate yourself, right? You always open up doors for yourself.
Were you a point guard? One of the things I always say about myself, I'm like, I'd rather have 30 assists than 30 points. And so it's a similar mindset, but maybe you wanted your court alter ego is 30 points.
And I wanted to be a point guard so bad, but growing up in small town Canada, I was a center. Anytime I got brought up the ball, my coach would yell at me, pass the ball off. You're not a guard. I'm like, nah, I'm Magic Johnson, buddy. I am Magic Johnson.
Oh,
I have a friend I go to basketball games with, and I was like, I was Nikola Jokic before Nikola Jokic. I was like a big guy passing. He's like, you do not compare yourself to Nikola Jokic. I'm like, dude, I was that. I had a vision. I'm going to tell you this. I am not a gifted athletic person. I have no physical skill. I am a student of everything. So I could read the game really, really well. And I work hard. And, you know, any success I had in sports was always because I like to try to figure stuff out. Like, I love. And you know what? Jokic is my guy. He does not look athletic at all. He's tall, but he does not look. And I was like, that's me. I was so not look athletic, but I would read stuff really, really well. So, yeah, I love plays. Yeah.
To your point, I love watching him play because of that, right? It just like keeps it all flowing. It's like bringing hockey in a way to basketball. Like everybody's flowing, everybody's staying engaged with it.
I can't remember if it was Larry Bird. I can't remember who he said it about, but he would say this about Jokic. He'd say, do not ever get a free agent from the Nuggets because every player on that team looks way better because they play with Jokic.
Yeah.
Right? So they're not that good.
Yeah.
Right? But because they play with Houghton, they look really, really good. And is kind of true. Like, we got KCP in Orlando. He's starting to play really, really well right now. But the first, like, he's not what he was in Denver. But now he's starting to pick it up. But I was like, oh, that's the Jokic factor. Like, Jokic just makes everyone look good. If I play with Jokic, I could get a bucket in the NBA.
We are going off the deep end. I'm going to send you my cell phone number. And when you have time, I will make time to talk and dive into basketball. This has been awesome. Thanks for making time for us. I really appreciate it. And I hope we get our paths crossed again soon.
All right. Don't exit out of Google Chrome. I know the trick.
Yeah.
Bye, everyone. Thanks for listening.
All right. See ya.